Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, guys, it's Grant Paulson. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast. We're changing things up. We're going to be making the show available for you 1 hour at a time. So if you're looking for a specific part of the hour of a show, look below at the description of what we've been talking about for time cues.
It's Danny. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you live on the radio from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. weekdays on 106.7 The Fan.
Second hour of four, getting started. Thank you, Pete. Grant and Danny, just after 11, 106.7 The Fan. Double play today at 11:45. There's a movie named Newsflash being made. Walter Cronkite, star of the film, obviously. The actor who's going to play Walter Cronkite makes no sense, and it's one of the worst casting decisions on paper I've ever heard in my life. So I want to tell you about that in the double play today. Will Brinson covers the NFL for CBS Sports' Eye on NFL blog, and he joins us on the hotline. Mattress Warehouse hotline's where we find him. Will, the NFL MVP race is fun, and it got more intriguing this past week. Tom Brady had a second straight poor performance. Carson Wentz got hurt. Antonio Brown lit it up. Russell Wilson didn't exactly play well with multiple interceptions. Right now, how would you handicap the MVP race?
Yeah, I think it's fascinating, guys. First off, the one guy who's at the top still, Tom Brady, you're right, has not played well. And I think it's interesting to note, and I pointed this out on our Pick 6 podcast for CBS Sports, which people can subscribe to on iTunes, and rate and review 5 stars, if you don't mind, that Tom Brady, weeks 2 through 11, I think it's 22 touchdowns and 2 picks, 70% completion rate, and about 300 passing yards per game. Then in week 12, he popped up on the injury report with an Achilles injury, and over the last 3 weeks, he's been on there, and he's only averaged 239 yards per game, 5 touchdowns, 4 picks, just 63% completions. I sort of wonder if there isn't something going on there with respect to his Achilles, and not because he's 40, just because an Achilles injury will sap anyone's athleticism, but he's still the leader in the clubhouse, I think. I did, in my ballot, I had Phillip Rivers at number 2, a guy that I don't think you mentioned, but the Chargers are 7-6, and they're playing on Saturday night in Kansas City with a shot at taking that division after starting 0-4. He's played tremendous football, and we talk about during the Heisman race about a Heisman moment. I think there's an MVP moment available for the three top guys. Rivers on Saturday night, if he beats the Chiefs and plays really well, that's an MVP moment. And I think you could see it too from Antonio Brown, who I had third. Brown playing exceptional football for the Steelers, obviously, even when Ben Roethlisberger struggled. Brown has been there as a safety net, as a dominant wide receiver. No wide receiver's ever won the AP NFL MVP, although a kicker has won it, as you guys, I'm sure, well know. I think Brown has a decent shot, but it's probably going to come down for both Brown and Brady to that Sunday afternoon game on CBS between the Steelers and the Patriots. You know, I would have a hard time seeing Tom Brady win the MVP if the Patriots don't have the number one seed. And I think the same case can be made for Brown, you know, if he doesn't go out there and put up big numbers against the Patriots in that game.
Yeah, well, that game is the story. People have been kind of looking at that one for a few weeks. Maybe the Patriots are looking at it this past week on their way down to Miami to get beat up by the Jay Cutler neckbeard all-stars. Handicap that game for us here. This Steelers-Patriots matchup, everyone thinks it's an AFC title game preview. How do you see it going?
It's tough because I think the Patriots are -2.5. Maybe moved to 2 when they looked bad against the Dolphins. They are so good after a loss. Like if you wanted to bet on the Steelers, you did not want the Patriots laying an egg in Miami because they're going to get blasted by Bill Belichick all week. Brady's going to be angry. You know, we saw that after they lost in week 1 against the Chiefs, just came out with the fury of a 1,040-year-old sons and just burned everybody to a crisp. That being said, when you look at what the Patriots had problems with on Monday, it's not impossible to recreate a situation in which the Steelers win the game. I mean, look, how are the Patriots, when they can't slow down Jay Cutler and Kenyon Drake and Jarvis Landry, how are the Patriots going to slow down Ben Roethlisberger, Le'Veon Bell, and Antonio Brown? I get that they have a history of dominating the Steelers in recent years, and you know that plays a big factor into this because Bill Belichick is just a better coach than Mike Tomlin. That's not an insult to Mike Tomlin. I don't know. It's hard. I think the biggest X factor is how are the Patriots going to look on offense as it relates to A, being willing to try to pound the ball, because that's what the Ravens and the Bengals did against the Steelers with Alex Collins and Gio Bernard after Joe Mixon got hurt. Ryan Shazier has been an emotional support for the Steelers, I think an inspiration, but his absence has been notable from a football standpoint at that linebacker position. Teams can run on the Steelers now. And with the Patriots, I mean, is Mike Gillisley going to be active this week? Like, finally, like, he's in there and they'll just pound the ball. Are they going to protect Brady? Will Brady be able to get those short throws to the wide receivers in the flats across the middle, to the running backs in the flats across the middle? It's going to be close. I mean, I think I would take the Patriots now because I'm too scared to take the Steelers and bet against Belichick and Brady. But I wouldn't be stunned if the Steelers pulled this upset.
At Will Brinson on Twitter, Nick Foles back in 2014 had a ridiculously impressive season he was coming off of to start a season and a chance to start about half the year. And he was okay with the Eagles. 15 with the Rams, he stunk up the joint. But everyone stinks with the Rams. Jared Goff last year and Case Keenum, and you see how they're doing now as they've got new coaches. I think that was kind of a situation no one could thrive in. What do you think he's going to be able to do for the Eagles, and are they going to be able to make a Super Bowl run with him?
The top three seeds in the NFC are all captained by ex-Jeff Fisher quarterbacks. what a world. I think that with Foles, I mean, you couldn't ask for a better team to have. I mean, obviously, you don't want it to happen to the Eagles, but you couldn't ask for a better team to deal with this because of the way that they're built, especially as it relates to December and January football, right? I mean, this team has loads of pass rushers. We've talked about this all year, talked about before the season. Timmy Jernigan, Fletcher Cox, Brandon Graham, Vinny Curry, Derek Barnett, Chris Long. I mean, they're sending guys after you all game long, and there just aren't a bunch of offensive lines who can hold up to that sort of pressure, especially with Jim Schwartz manning the controls there. So, you know, Philly can still play defense. Carson Wentz and Nick Foles don't affect that. And the addition of Jay Ajayi suddenly becomes even bigger, right? Because he's looked good as he's starting to learn this scheme and this offense. LeGarrette Blount is there too. Corey Clement. They have a lot of versatile running backs. It looked like a weakness coming into the year, and now all of a sudden they have this late season pound the ball type of offensive approach. And I think it sets up well for Nick Foles because, you know, you can work the play out. He doesn't have to come in and be like, he doesn't have to go play for the Seahawks, right? If Russell Wilson went down and Nick Foles, and then maybe this is the MVP argument for Russell Wilson. If Russell Wilson went down and Nick Foles played for the Seahawks, Nick Foles would be dead in 48 hours. Right.
Yeah.
But because he's playing, I mean, he's not even joking. Like, he's just dead. But if he plays for the, you know, playing for the Eagles, he's got protection. He's got weapons on the outside. He's got Zach Ertz there. He's got this running game. He's got this defense. He can be a game manager type and just not make mistakes and make a couple of throws. We know he can make the throws, and these RPO type plays are built in, which are not dissimilar from what he ran with Chip Kelly when he had that great 27-2 or 29-2, whatever the touchdown
27, yeah.
Interception ratio. Yeah, 27-2. That's crazy. Thank God Tom Brady destroyed that record last year. And I think they can still win games. And if they go 2-1, which is not even that hard to do down the stretch, they could probably end up being the number one seed. And then it's just win two home games and you're in the Super Bowl. So yeah, it's viable, but I think at some point, one of these really good NFC defenses will catch up with them.
Will, great with us as always, bud. We appreciate the time, man. If we don't talk to you, have a great Christmas. Okay.
All right, guys, take it easy.
See you, buddy.
Be well. There's Will Brinson on Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Next on G&D, Jordan Reed to the injured reserve. Tallied up the percentage of games he's missed since he got to Washington. The number might shock. We'll do that next on The Fan. Day. Kent Babb of the Washington Post, who wrote a gut-wrenching and heartbreaking story on Larry Johnson, former Redskin for a very short time and a great NFL running back in Kansas City with the Chiefs, who thinks he's dealing with CTE while living through what is a terrible time right now with anxiety and depression and negative emotions constantly that he has a hard time dealing with. But we'll talk to Kent Babb about the time he spent with Johnson and the story he wrote, which I think is must-read for NFL fans. But to Jordan Reed, who in his own right has had concussion and health problems and has done his best to play through them. This year, that just wasn't a possibility. He ends up missing 10 games when this season is over. I tweeted this yesterday, and I think a lot of people were surprised by this number, even though you know how often Jordan Reed is not available. But if you go back through the years and you look at the games that Jordan Reed has missed, as a rookie, he missed 7. As a sophomore, he missed 5. In 2015, which was his huge breakout year that got him paid, basically, he played in 14 games, missed 2, and in that year had 87 catches for 950 yards.
Staggering numbers.
One of the great seasons by a tight end in recent league history. If you extrapolate out 2 more games and probably another 15 catches for 150 yards and another touchdown or two. Last year, he missed 4 games, a quarter of the year. Still went for almost 700 yards and 6 touchdowns as one of the best weapons in the conference. And then this year was the least that he's played, just 5 starts in 6 games. But you go back and you crunch the numbers. He has now been a Redskin for 6 seasons. You do the math, I should say 5 seasons. He's entering his 6th year this offseason. You do the math, that's 80 games the Redskins will have played at the end of this season in the Jordan Reed era. He will have missed 28 of them. That means he has been unavailable because of injury 35% of the time for the Washington Redskins. Unavailable 35% of the time he's missed since he got to the NFL.
So I heard Craig Hoffman this morning on with the Junkies, does an awesome job as our Redskins reporter. He also has another life as a personal trainer, somebody that is in impeccable shape and knows the human body way better than I do or anybody else listening probably does, unless you're a personal trainer. So he spoke at length about Jordan Reed's plan and kind of how this all went down and what got broken. I mean, think of it. You've heard these kinds of stories before. Jordan Reed wanted to bulk up and be better all around as a tight end, which what does that mean? It means you block better. You don't just get knocked around and you don't become a glorified slot receiver. You want to be a complete, you know, 360-degree tight end. Well, he bulked up too much, and that led to his body getting out of balance, and sometimes when you have too much weight, who has that happened to in town? I think Bryce Harper, for example. Remember when he got huge and got swole? Next thing you know, the knee's an issue. Ta-da, it happens. Sometimes your body can take more muscle. Some guys just don't have the frame for it. He may be that guy. So Craig spoke eloquently this morning about how he buys into Jordan Reed's plan, and he'll try this and that, and maybe add some flexibility. Maybe he takes yoga. Maybe he does ballet. I don't know. I think that all sounds well and good. I've also read that article about he changed his diet. He hired a private chef. He's in the best shape of his life. He tried this off-season regime, and they work great in January and February, and then when guys report to some kind of spring workout in March, etc. I've read that before. I think this is now, unfortunately, the new normal. Maybe not missing 10 games in a season, obviously, and just and being barely available when he is, but you've seen this. You've seen the not only is it, go back to those first couple years, Grant, not just games missed, but series missed within games, where he has a reception, he gets breaks a tackle, and a couple guys, gang him and knock him down to the ground, and then he's gone for 2 series or 3 series or whatever the heck it is, getting something checked out. It's just, this is the new normal now, and it stinks.
Yeah, it stinks, and it is, I don't even know if it's a new normal, by the way. But
well,
It's the normal, unfortunately. Here's the question, though, Danny, is, can Jordan Reed leave any of this behind him? And I ask that not thinking he's going to play 16 games every single season for the rest of his career, because I don't think that's a thing. But there is a long list of guys who, as they spent more time in the NFL, learned their bodies better, learned how to put together off-season programs and plans, as you put it, as Craig said on the Junkies, who were able to stay healthier. Not quite as an extreme as an example, but Santana Moss, I think in his first 4 years in the league, who you hear on the Fan all the time, played the entire season once. And if you go even further than that, in his first 7 years in the league, I think played his entire season 16 games twice. Then from year 8 to like year 12 in the league, There was only one time when he didn't play 16 games.
I mean, he always, remember this? He always had a groin or a hammy.
It was always hammies with him.
Or a groin and hammy.
Yeah.
He always had something.
For the most part, he was around 14 or so games played, but he was missing time every single year. And then suddenly, you go to like 2008, when he's, at that point, a veteran who's closing in on being like 28, 29 years old.
He was around 30 then, right?
Prime of his career, 16 games, 16 games, 16 games, 12 games, 16 games, 16 games. It can happen. I don't need Jordan Reed to play in 16 games for him to be worth what he is paid. I need him to be available in, as I said the other day, a dozen games. What I would love is a 12 to 13 range for Jordan Reed. You miss three or four games per year, I can live with that, man.
Yeah.
I can, because you're that good the rest of the time. What I can't have is probably the nine games of your rookie season, and certainly not even a third of a year this season, when also I was held hostage because it was one thing after another and you were questionable a bunch of times, and during the week you were going to try to gut it out and we were going to see. He also wasn't himself. I mean, in his career, he's averaged less than double-digit yards per catch once. This year he didn't even average 8 yards per catch. Do you realize that?
Yeah.
He averaged about 7 yards per reception.
Just not dynamic at all, even
right,
when he was out there.
He had a couple of great plays because he's Jordan Reed. But for the most part, he was just another dude at tight end. His burst was somewhat sapped. His explosiveness was not the same. His ability to cut and leave people in his wake one-on-one. All the things that he does that makes him an elite, upper echelon, unique, differentiating talent were gone.
Go back to 2016. Remember that play? There are a couple. There are two that stand out, but in addition to some of the great catches, et cetera. The catch against the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yep,
in
that's
London.
My favorite one from last year.
It's a first down. Nice job, Jordan. Oh, my God, what's he doing? Holy crap, he just scored a touchdown when there was nothing else there. That was like Jamison Crowder getting the ball in space. The other, when there was nothing there, nothing was available, a terrible throw from Kirk Cousins, behind him breaking in the wrong direction.
Giants game.
He catches the damn thing like it's a Nerf ball in the backyard. He's doing a trick, jumping off the diving board, trying to get a Snapchat
Wasn't
video.
That at the Giants in week three last year?
He jukes two guys out of his shoes, breaks a tackle, spin move, gets all. It was a third and long. They get a first down. They go on to score that drive. You're going, this person's not playing the same game as everybody else. You're patient because those things happen. That's a give-up play. That's a check down. That's a, all right, screw it. And he made joy happen out of nothing.
You see this at this position with the other great player as well, Rob Gronkowski, by the way. Gronk missed 9 games in 13, didn't play a full season in 14, didn't play a full season in 15.
He's banged up a lot.
Missed half the year in 2016, is going to miss at least 3 games or so this year. You got the suspension as well.
Mm-hmm.
The Patriots have never once thought about getting rid of Rob Gronkowski because he's too special and he means too much to their offense. I'm not thinking about getting rid of Jordan Reed. We did ask that question of you guys. Would you want to keep him or not? And by the way, most of our callers, believe it or not, were on Team Danny, which was move on from him this offseason, which I found pretty staggering. But here's the question we wanted to cover today, because we've been there and we've done that. Do you think he can leave this behind him, or is this a career-long issue for Jordan Reed? Is this just what this is going to be? Or maybe with a tweaked way of going about a plan, maybe with a different way of training and his work habits, maybe with a fresh voice in his ear. Do you think that there's a chance that 5 years from now we look back and say, remember when Jordan Reed used to get hurt all the time?
You remember when that idiot Danny said to move on from him because you can't trust him? What a dumb thing to say.
800-636-1067 is the number. Can Jordan Reed leave this behind him, or is he always going to be prone for injuries? Grant and Danny on the Fan. Do you think he can make any adjustments to leave this in the rear view? I don't think he can, but here is what I do think. I think this year is a little bit of a fluke. He was chasing his tail from jump street, playing through that broken bone in his foot. Had they have just shut him down, obviously he would have taken a lot of heat for it. But maybe he comes back and plays the last 8 games of the year.
Yeah, I don't fault him for trying. I mean, he tried. It sounds like his butt off to get back.
He worked through it. This is not an issue where it used to be that the Shanahans thought this guy just went to the sideline and didn't want to gut through something. That is not where we are anymore. I think he's learned how to overcome pain and push through in a way that even some guys in his own locker room don't always try to do. So this was not a guy that got paid and doesn't care anymore. That's ridiculous. However, I do think he can play 11 and 12 games a year. I absolutely think he can be in the 13, 14 range in a good season. You saw it back in 2015. If I had to bet money right now on how many games Jordan Reed plays in next year, you're going to think I'm crazy. I would put money on like 13 or 14. I think that he will be closer to 16 than to 10 more often than not the remainder of his career, because I think he's getting smarter. He'll put better programs together. And I do think that this year was lost largely because of the injury and the compensation to kind of a fluky injury. Do we ever find out how he hurt his foot?
I don't know. I
remember
seen
it was just
specifics.
Like a shocker when he showed up at camp that he had this broken bone in his foot.
Because it was late in the quote-unquote offseason that
right.
It happened, right?
Did it happen at OTAs? Did it happen while training? I don't remember if we ever got that answer.
Did we ever? Was he riding an ATV? Was he doing something he shouldn't have been doing? I've never heard. I don't know what it is. The compensation injury is a thing. And that's what I was kind of trying to maintain when we're talking about shutting guys down. This toe leads to a hamstring. I think that's who he's always going to be. If you give me an over-under of 13 and a half games, I'd take the under. I think I'd probably take the under at 12 and a half games at this point. I just don't think he escapes this. I've read this article too many times about how many things have changed and it all looks good in May when no one's in pads. But I just think this is one of those guys that plays a position that he's going to get hurt in. He's going to have too much physical contact. He's someone that needs to avoid contact, and he's going to be engaged in some.
Some bodies aren't meant to play football.
Yeah.
And it seems like his might be one.
This is one.
Jason in King George, how are you?
Jason.
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself, fellas?
Good, man.
Very well. Happy holidays.
Hey, same to you. Hey, I kind of agree in a sense of I think he's going to be banged up the rest of his career. I mean, some guys just their bodies can't take it. And like you said, he's in a position where he's going to have contact. I mean, it gets to the point to where I almost feel, and I know you already touched on this in previous weeks, but I almost feel we do have to move forward. I mean, if I miss 35% of my work, no matter how good I am at it, my boss has to let me go.
Thank
appreciate you,
buddy.
You, man. Yeah. If you miss 35% of your availability, your boss would have to think about it. But if you were maybe the best in the country or one of the two or three best in the country at what you do the rest of the time,
there's
when you
more
play,
leeway for him.
You might get to keep your job. Now, here's the difference. When he was at the office this year, he wasn't himself.
Right.
He wasn't making the same sales. He wasn't turning in the same reports. Rice in Upper Marlboro, you're on Grant and Danny.
Hi, how's it going, guys?
What's up, dude?
Nothing much. Jordan Reed, he's a good player, but I think we should move on without him. Because since he's been here, I don't know if he's played even 10 games a season. I'm not sure, but he's not dependable. He's a great player, but we have to move on without him because we need our team to be there, and he's never dependable. And I just think we ought to move on without him.
Yeah, I'm not going to shout anybody down who says to move on from him because he has opened that door with his lack of availability and, to use his word, dependability. I disagree, but I understand the sentiment that if I never know when you're going to be able to play, I can't pay you huge money. And this is the offseason. If you're going to get out of that big contract with the cap number right. That grows, your get-out-of-jail-free card is at the end of this year.
He said, I don't know if he's even played 10 games. He has. He played 11, 14, and 12
I think he means
in consecutive
on average,
seasons.
As we've gone through the numbers many
right.
times.
He's now averaging right at just over 10 games. I mean, in five seasons, you can do the math, just over 50 games, that's about 10 per season.
Let's go to Bobby and Olney.
Hey, Bobby.
Hey, guys.
Hey, dude.
So let me preface this by saying, so I'm a sports chiropractor and a functional movement specialist. So I think that it's possible for him to be able to move on past a lot of these movement-based injuries with proper training and everything. But I don't think that we have that with this organization. So I think that he's better off someplace else. The other thing, though, is his history of concussions. Once you get a concussion, it's just easier to get more and more. So that's another thing. So
that's
with all the contact and everything like that, time to move on.
Yeah, but if you didn't sign or keep players on your roster based on concussions, there wouldn't be any players left to sign. Just because you know the public nature of Jordan Reed's concussion problem doesn't mean that Vernon Davis, who's his backup, hasn't had 9 that weren't documented in his career that spans before everyone documented every single concussion or in high school or in college. So I don't really play the concussion game at the same level. I remember when he got a concussion, and it was his third or fourth, I think, if you date back to Florida. And the point at that time was, he said, I probably had as many as 6, and it's scary, and I'm talking to my family. Everyone made that story. He's one away from his career ending. Or he's eight away. You know, or he just keeps playing like so many other guys.
Yeah, we don't know.
But there's no way to know that.
But I think when you add it into the pot, it becomes another data point of, this,
I guess.
Again, this could be over in an instant.
Yeah.
Right?
I think that's the case for most players, to be honest with you. Carl in Alexandria, what's up?
Carl, good to see you.
Hey, Carl. You ready for the holiday season? You going to go see Santa at the mall? Tell him what you want?
Carl, if you're listening, make a gentle hiss on the phone.
I'm not a Carl guy. What
that's
about
what
you?
Listen, Carl made some good points to Brendan at one point.
He
on
did?
The call screenings. Yeah, I bet you. He was talking Brendan Zeroff, probably.
Was he a good talker to you, Brendan?
Brendan, he called and spoke to you, right?
Yeah. Brendan said he was a pretty reasonable guy.
He didn't want to talk to us. That's for sure.
Here's a couple items that came across the old Twitter feed in the last few minutes.
Yep.
First from the winter meetings, Scott Boras says he met with the Nationals and ownership last month for preliminary conversations on a Bryce Harper extension. Boras on the chances something gets done before the season. That's up to ownership. We'll have to look at it and report back to Bryce, end quote. He's basically saying, show us the money.
Yeah.
But they have at least had a conversation with the Nats.
It's up to them.
About getting a long-term deal done with Bryce Harper.
This is what I ask. This is what I ask. Conversations. Right now, you get to have conversations. You know who else does? Nobody else. This is your time. Have conversations. The same way, for example, this is just a different example I'm offering. The Redskins had a chance to have conversations with Pierre Garçon. They didn't. Didn't even send him a text message. Couldn't bother to talk to him. Now, you may not have been part of your plans. That's fine. Talk to people. Let's have conversations.
You saw the report, I'm guessing. I don't remember if it was a report or if it was just something that was floated or what it was. But it was basically that Boras wants a 15-year deal, about $40 million per, $600 million.
The old 15 for 6, your standard issue contract.
You can't look me in the face without laughing and tell me that if you were the Nationals, you would do that. You just can't.
I love Bryce Harper. I think he's iconic. Again, my 4-year-old doesn't know anything about anything, but he knows who Bryce Harper is.
You cannot give that guy $600 million.
You can't give anybody $600 million.
I agree. Also, he gets hurt all the time.
Yeah, he does.
You want to talk about Jordan Reed? Now, I mean, this is a different level because he could win the MVP any year, obviously. But you can't give Bryce Harper a 15-year contract, $40 million per.
I don't think 15 should be on the table for anybody anytime.
Remember, is it 3 years ago now? Certainly 2 years ago when I was saying, just offer him $40 million a year at $400 million right now this second and get this done.
10 and 400.
Might have been able to do it then. You certainly can't do that now. There is zippy chance I'm offering him $600 million bucks. The other thing that caught our attention, and we should talk about this at 12:18, there were two NFL games that outrated the Redskins game in Washington, D.C. this weekend.
And they barely beat the third game that was on at the same time.
Cowboys outrated the Redskins at 1 o'clock. The Ravens and the Steelers, which was a primetime national TV game, so maybe that's not quite fair, but outrated the Redskins in Washington, D.C. in almost a third game. The Redskins had their lowest ratings this weekend against the Chargers, a blowout loss at 4:05 in years. And not only that, it was lower than some of their preseason games of a handful of years ago. That should sound some alarm bells in Ashburn. If you're Bruce and Dan, you should be running around loosening that tie up and going, we got to have a meeting, guys. Everyone sit down. Let's talk about these numbers.
This more than a win or loss. This more than what happens over the next 3 weeks. This more than maybe anything else. I never thought I would see the numbers we're about to tell you in the 12 o'clock hour. Someone who grew up here and loves the Redskins so much and saw the parade where everybody was just overjoyed and strangers hugging strangers. A million people watched Joe Gibbs put the trophy over his head and say, we did it. I never thought I'd see this day. Ever.
Insane. We'll talk about it in 30 minutes. Next, our double play. The worst casting for Walter Cronkite in world history. I want to get into that. Danny's got a double play as well. And then we've got your blitz at noon. You're listening to Grant and Danny. We'll talk to him about it in 1 hour. Right now, let's get to our double play. Danny, you are familiar with the exploits of one Walter Cronkite?
One of the most respected newsmen ever. He was the guy that delivered, this is the story, and this is what's going on.
He would sit there like the old-timey news guys who smoke their cigarette and tell you what's going on in the world. And to be honest with you, I think we lack right now more than anything someone that you can trust that's sitting there calling it how they see it. Someone that is not biased, someone who's not a Democrat telling you why the Republican's an idiot, or a Republican telling you why the Democrat is a liberal jerk. No, we need someone who's down the center and just believable, because they're going to present both sides of the story. Our Will McAvoy, if you will. Everybody needs someone who's going to just get the story right. And it used to be you had Walter Cronkite and Edward R. Murrow, and the world has changed. We don't have that anymore. There isn't that person, and I've long thought it's a problem. But the reason I bring this up is there is a movie being made called Newsflash that is, it's a David Gordon Green-led project on the JFK assassination coverage on CBS. And so clearly the star of this operation, the star of this film, is going to be the character of Walter Cronkite. Walter Cronkite in his prime at this time was, I don't know how old, I would guess in his young 40s probably at that time, maybe upper 30s.
I think you sleep on how much older he was then. He was born in, like, before the Great Depression. So he was
that, like, would still be maybe in his mid 40s.
I think he was like 50. Maybe.
Was he that old?
Yeah. Or close to it. Mid-upper 40s. Yeah, man. So actually not that far away from what you're saying. I did my math wrong real quick. Yeah, so I would guess he's probably close to 50 at this time.
Right.
Not a huge deal.
So, but that's what I'm thinking, is kind of in his 40s, right? Let's say it's somewhere between upper 30s to 50. To me, you can cast someone kind of similarly.
Sure.
But I think of Walter Cronkite, I think of an old man.
Mm-hmm.
I actually bumped into him once. I didn't know him at the time. I was a kid. I was up in New York, and we were going into this hotel, and Walter Cronkite was walking out of the hotel, and my dad goes, "That's Walter Cronkite." And I said, "Who's Walter Cronkite?
Who does he play for, Dad?"
And that's when he told me who Walter Cronkite was, at which point I kind of did some research and found out more about him. And in the 20 years since, I've learned a lot more about Walter Cronkite. But my knowledge of him is just him as the old version of himself, right? I say all this to tell you, if you're making a movie about Walter Cronkite, name someone who you think would make sense to play Walter Cronkite. Like the type of actor where you could see, okay, that guy, you slick his hair back, you shave him, you put him at the desk with a suit and tie looking sharp. He's going to deliver the news that something crazy is happening in the world, that a president has been assassinated. That's believable.
A couple names come to mind. He's not doing this anymore, but you know Daniel Day-Lewis would live for a year and a half as Walter Cronkite and then somehow come up with the exact character.
Can't go wrong with him.
I would throw, based on his performance in the show The Crown, John Lithgow, there's a resemblance there. You could put him in some makeup.
Wow,
and
you give him,
because he's got that deep voice.
He's
and he
a
can
little
kinda
bit old for me, but I'll play your game.
Right? God, who else? Not Liam Neeson, because you can never lose his accent. Like, he's always like that.
No,
that
you can't
work.
Do that. Tommy, you got one?
I have one. He's played a guy named Walter before. John
Goodman. John Goodman!
John Goodman.
You could ask
Walter
John
Cronkite
to lose a few LBs and OZs and step behind the desk. He could do it.
He's just got to sit behind the desk the whole time.
He's got the gravitas.
I could see it. And you could even go with some of the great actors of our time if you want to. Like, the problem is some of them, like Gene Hackman or a guy like that plays characters really well, probably too old at this point.
Okay.
Unless you're okay with basically the old version of Walter Cronkite outdated.
If you're doing a biopic where you get the old Walter too.
But I was even thinking like Leonardo DiCaprio sitting there.
He could do it.
I could see playing Walter Cronkite.
Tom Cruise could do it, but
it's
wouldn't
a bad
run
time
at any
to
point
cast Kevin Spacey for something, right?
Yeah,
you can't do that anymore.
No, you can't do that
because Kevin Spacey would make a good Walter Cronkite.
Can't do that.
There are other guys I could bring up for you. Okay,
uh-huh.
I won't. The person who has been cast to play Walter Cronkite is Seth Rogen.
Come on,
Seth Rogen.
Come on,
is going to play Walter Cronkite. This is from Deadline.com.
This is dead on arrival.
This is, and I'm not trying to be a jerk because I think Seth Rogen's hilarious and I want him to have a lot of success in his career.
And he has.
First of all, he should say no when they ask him to do this. That's number one. Number two, this is the worst on-paper casting I've ever seen in my life. Like, just knowing who a person is supposed to be and knowing who they are, I don't know that I've ever heard something that misses the mark more. Here is the story from the Deadline. Rogen is attached to play iconic CBS newsman Walter Cronkite in Newsflash, Ben Jacoby scripted drama, The Stronger Direction, David Gordon Green will direct next year. The film takes place November of 1963, the day JFK was assassinated in Texas. It was that day the television network's news came of age. Cronkite became the most trusted newsman voice of America, even if he wasn't first to announce the president had died, which I didn't even know that he wasn't first. But that is the only lesson you need, young journalists. to know that being first doesn't matter as much as doing it correctly. NBC broke that story, not Walter Cronkite. We remember Cronkite's coverage, though. What does that tell you? But anyway, Seth freaking Rogen. I saw this yesterday. I couldn't stop thinking about it.
I assume James Franco's in the movie somewhere and there's like pot purchased.
Right.
That's so
dumb. Can you imagine?
It's like, the worst casting since Seth Rogen is the Green Hornet.
They're like getting updates on the JFK situation. They go to break and they're like, was that a good take? Are you kidding me? How did we get here?
Now,
how does that happen?
There have been times.
People said no before? Like, how does that idea come about?
There have been times where I've seen a casting on paper and been like, this is the worst idea ever. And then Heath Ledger's the Joker. See what I'm saying? Like, when it was like, okay, this movie that means a lot to a lot of people, Heath Ledger's going to be the Joker. You mean the teeny bopper guy from 10 Things I Hate About You, or the guy who was in the movie with the knights where, like, everyone was hot and they, like, jousted and his arm was hurt? That's the worst. He's terrible. Next thing you know, he put in the performance of a lifetime. And, you know, maybe, unfortunately, it claimed it. But so it's happened before where bad casting on paper turned out great. I wouldn't put money on that one.
Is Jonah Hill going to be, like, his runner who's bringing him his sheets that he needs? He's like, Jonah, get me my papers. You are looking live. Like, what? Really?
There's no way.
I just can't believe that
works.
This is not going to work. There you go. That is your double play. We'll go blitzing at noon at 12:18. You got NFL games outrating the Redskins in D.C. As Danny put it, who'd have thought we'd ever get to this day? You're listening to The Fan.
Folks, Danny Ruye for my guys at Ted Britford. Go see them at Ted Britford. It's nice and toasty in those showrooms in Fairfax and Chantilly. You can hammer out a deal. Great deals on some of the terrific cars. Number one, a car brand in America, the old Ford. Right. I got a couple in the Ruye family. That's right. We got two lease deals with the Ted Britford folks. 2016 Ford Edge. The wife pushes that whip. We love it. Also got a 2017 Ford Fusion. It's parked downstairs right now. Charging up, baby. I don't get gas. I get electricity. 0% financing for 72 months on all the 2017s. It's their time. They had their time. This is your time. They got to go. You get great deals. You want another great deal? How about this one? 2018 Ford Explorer. You can lease just $245 a month, or you want to buy. That's your option. You have that option as an American citizen. $8,000 off the MSRP. Speaking of Ford Fusions, you get the 2018 version. So, frankly, a little bit better than mine. $199 a month or up to $6,000 off the MSRP. You got to love it. Go see my pals at Ted Britford. And when you go, please tell them that you're here.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.